You're listening to Yumcha, a news podcast from Hong Kong Free Press, with me, Mercedes Hutton. This week, a bright future for Hong Kong's neon heritage, with Chan Kalun. For decades, evenings in Hong Kong were illuminated by the soft glow of neon signs that spilled from either side of narrow streets like a poorly played game of Tetris. As the post-war economy prospered, so too did the city's neon industry, with family-run firms and major companies installing handcrafted signs to advertise their wares. But tighter government regulations have seen them disappear over the last 10 years or so, leaving just a handful of neon masters still working in Hong Kong. There is a younger generation of neon artists, though, who seek to shine a new light on the century-old craft. Chan Kalun is one of them. We met in Kalun's studio, an industrial unit in Hong Kong's New Territories. Surrounded by boxes of glass tubes, a small LPG canister hooked up to a ribbon burner, and countless neon signs and artworks, we discussed what prompted Kalun to take up neon bending, the difficulties she has encountered, and why she will never call herself a neon master. We met because I interviewed you for a piece I was writing about neon. I think you just hosted an exhibition.
Yeah, that's correct.
And is that how you kind of got into it?
Yeah, back then in 2018, I organized and curated a group neon art exhibition called My Light, My Hood at Kong Art Space
in
Central. And then basically trying to demonstrate how different artists are portraying Hong Kong or a very dear neighborhood to them, and with an accent of neon, just like how neon is decorating our street as well.
Yeah, because they weren't each neon artists, right?
No, none of us were. But then we collaborated with Master Wong, who is the most experienced neon master in Hong Kong. And I also organized some like basic neon bending workshop for each artist. That's actually how I know how difficult it is to manipulate glass with fire.
Yeah, okay.
To actually have a sense of it.
Is that the first time you ever tried it?
Yes.
Okay, and then you're like, I want to do this.
Yes, it's like, I think like I wanted to do it also because of the low accessibility of it as well. It's kind of quite challenging,
that doesn't
you know?
Make sense, you know. This seems really hard, like, so I'm going to try.
Yeah, it's kind of like, it's very challenging, and I think maybe I love challenges as well. So I find it very attractive in a sense, and also because how complicated it is. So yeah, I want to be a cool kid, so that's how I got into it, I guess.
Why in the first place did you host that exhibition? Why were you interested in neon?
To be honest, it was just that Fred, my boyfriend, and I had this conversation. And then back then, I was already organizing a lot of non-commercial art exhibitions to showcase like a variety of artists that are in Hong Kong that might be always working on their commercial projects or jobs, that they don't even have the time to develop their own collection or work. So for me, it's like, yes, an exposure for all of these like hidden gems, and also like a way for artists to, you know, develop something.
Yeah.
Even if it's not really what they're going to pursue, but, you know, a platform, a space for everyone to experiment on something. And that's why I've been doing that. And then they're always about like Hong Kong culture or minorities in a sense. And so like back then, after doing, I think, two exhibitions, and then Fred and I was just having this conversation, and then we were just talking about, oh, how cool it is if we can have neon in a car garage. And then basically, it was just trying to put like a lot of different unexpected elements together. And maybe also because of my background in theater, like my background was set design, I really like things really theatrical or like with a very contrasting visual compact. And after we have this idea, the first thing I did was really to ask around all the car parks and car garage in Hong Kong. Uh-huh. And like, it was quite an interesting journey for me. And I always find doing these kind of projects in Hong Kong like interesting, because you will be so surprised how many people or even corporate would support like an idea like this. Like, imagine I don't know them, but then like all of a sudden I'm knocking the door of maybe the director of this property management company, and I'm just like, oh yeah, I want to do a deal exhibition in your car park, even if you just assign a small area to me. And they'll be like, yeah, come to my office and let's have a chat.
That's really interesting, because I think you assume that there's like a huge barrier to entry and that there's like no support for the kind of art scene here.
I thought like they might be just shutting the door, mm-hmm. or like they would just be like, oh, it sounds too silly, and then like not even replying my emails or calls, but like actually inviting me to have a proper face-to-face meeting mm-hmm. with the team. That made me feel like, oh yeah, they find it interesting and definitely have some value added to them. And of course, with the property management companies, now I understand why they can't really mm-hmm. exhibit it in a car park. But then at the end, we did exhibit it in Kong, mm-hmm. which I still love the idea of it, especially when it also has a turntable for cars.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so cool.
It was a car park, right?
Yeah.
Is it still?
No, it's not now.
No.
But it used to be.
Yeah.
So it... Yeah, I'm very glad that I pulled it off and mm-hmm. actually found a venue for it.
Yeah. You believe in like bringing art to like everybody rather than it kind of staying in like an elitist like white space. Is that right?
I do believe that art for all. Mm-hmm. I think that's also from my background, because I do believe how knowledge or culture should be shared amongst everyone. And also, like, even if it's not just art, something that I really believe in is that museums or exhibitions, they can draw people from different cultures mm-hmm. together. Like, I remember this quote, not exactly from an Arabic prince, when he was opening the Islamic wing of the Louvre back then. And he said something like... he's supporting it because when you can see the artifacts or the pieces from other cultures, it actually draws similarities with you, mm-hmm. within the viewer themselves. And the more that if you look at things from other cultures or from other countries, you will try to understand them more and maybe avoid conflict in a sense. And I do really believe in the power of museum and exhibitions in this sense. And that's also why I feel like, yes, museum should be all and art should be as well. Because like a lot of people are just thinking, oh, art is something that is so hard to understand. They're so abstract. Mm-hmm. You have to walk into a white wall galleries and like try to be quiet, like tiptoeing in the gallery.
Yeah.
I think also because in Hong Kong, it's kind of known as a cultural desert. And we always think art is something so hard to reach out as, mm-hmm. but it's actually all around us.
Yeah.
So I want to demonstrate that you can actually see art in places that are unexpected. Mm-hmm. And hopefully that will bring in more exposure of different form of art even to the audience here.
Yeah.
And then in a sense that like maybe they will know how to appreciate art more in different point of view or not.
Yeah.
It's also okay to hate it like it. It's something very personal. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So.
Your neon journey obviously began back with that exhibition that you did at Kong. But when did you actually decide to really like throw yourself into it?
When did I really...
Like, when did you become the neon girl? Where did that project come from?
Okay. So after the experience in Kong, we actually did a neon installation of Wonderfruit.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Mm. In Thailand.
Yeah, in Thailand. And I...
Did you make that, personally? Yes.
I thought I could, with the little experience I had from the exhibition before, I might be able to bend the neon myself and actually have someone to teach me.
Okay.
I thought.
Yeah.
But I got rejected by the community here.
Okay.
So I actually went to learn neon making from a glass sculptures artist in Shaki Mei.
Okay.
Who has no idea how to do neon making as
Right, okay.
He was watching YouTube video the day before he taught me, he said. And he taught me neon bending for, what, an hour? And then I tried mm-hmm. to practice it for an hour. And that's how I made the piece for Wonder Food. And actually, that was when I started to like this medium, because of how, like, the similarity I can draw between, like, a Chinese calligraphy and neon somehow. Right. Because, like, once the glass is very malleable, you can, of course, you can shape it in the way you want. But, like, once you kind of fuck it up, it's like you can't do much about it. But it can also be part of your expression. Kind of like Chinese calligraphy, where you would value expressions or even mistakes.
Yeah, right.
More than perfection. Mm-hmm. And then I remember back then I was doing this Chinese word. And remember, I don't have any proper training and experience. I was just thinking like, oh, let me try and do this. I think maybe I should bend it in a certain way. I remember it was like There was a tube in the middle, and then I was trying to bend it over to make a U shape, made it kind of sculptural in a sense. That, to be honest, if you asked me to do the same thing now, I would have no idea how did I do it.
Right, but you did do it.
Yes, I was like, oh my god, I made it! It's so fun, and then it's like that kind of moment of satisfaction when you did something. You try to visualize in your head. Yeah, that brought me some unexpected satisfaction. And that's how I joined into it. And then after that, I really want to try and learn it as a weekend hobby, you know, like something small. And then, like, still, I showed, like, neon vendors in Hong Kong, like, what I did, tried to ask them to teach me. Again, I got rejected.
How big is the community of neon?
Very small.
Right. How many do you think?
I think there are less than 5 neon benders.
Yeah.
Excluding me, I would never consider myself as a neon bender.
What you do is more kind of artistic and interpretive. Theirs is probably more commercial.
Yes. So they would be really doing signs.
Yeah.
And then I am doing something more experimental. Mm-hmm. So, like, actually, after the experience of Wonder Food, I feel very hyped up. And I saw this neon piece online by Studio Swine.
Where are they based?
I think they're based in London.
Yeah.
I saw this very organic shape of neon with some electricity running through it. And I was just like, wow, can you do that with neon? I've never seen that. So I asked the community in Hong Kong to see if anyone know how to do it or can teach me how to do it. And yeah, like, no one can help me with that. And then I was quite frustrated, but, like, you know, like, it's just something that I thought it would be nice if I can learn how to do it. And then Fred and I went to Amsterdam and then tried to settle there 3 years ago before the pandemic. And then he wanted to give me a birthday present, and I was just, like, randomly saying, like, oh, it would be nice if I can take a neon class here. And then he really tried to find a studio that is willing to teach me, and specifically on what I wanted to learn, which is exactly what Studio Swine did with the organic neon and sparkling electricity in it. And everyone rejected us again. But luckily, in a little town that is like half an hour away from Amsterdam, I happened to have a high school friend who was based there. And she was saying, oh, try this place. It's a shop in my town. And this guy might be happy to help you. And we emailed him, and he instantly say yes. And I'm so excited because I was just like, oh, we got so much rejection. This is like the first guy who accepted me and also know how to do what I want.
Mm.
So I was very curious.
Yeah.
And when I met him, I think also because of the Dutch hospitality, he is like very friendly. My teacher was like Remy. And yeah, he's a very friendly Dutch guy. And when we were talking about my experience in Hong Kong, where no one understands or know how to do what Studios Wine did, he said like, oh yeah, because you actually need an oven for it.
Oh.
And then, okay. Yes, that's the moment when I was thinking, my brain was running really fast, mm-hmm. and I was like, oh my God, this is fascinating! I was like, yes, if you trace back to why we have the neon train in Hong Kong, it was back in 50s and 60s, and then all the seafoods, they were trying to find a job to feed their families. So for them, it's a trade for bread and butter.
Mm.
And at the same time, because it's 50s and the 60s, a normal Hong Kong families wouldn't have an oven because it's a Western cooking appliance. Yeah, right,
of course.
So it would be too pricey to even afford to have a mini one that we have now. And so if you consider the fact that, okay, a lot of the neon vendors in Hong Kong, they are only doing neon as a job, and then they don't have these kind of appliances, they probably don't have the passion or have the experimental mindset to try different things with this item they're working with every day.
Mm-hmm.
So that actually sparked something in my brain, and I was just thinking, this is very interesting to me to try to investigate on how different country developed their neon based on their cultural, geographical, historical factors.
Yeah.
Or even economically. And then that's how I set foot in starting the Neon Girl project. Mm-hmm. And I've been learning so much from different neon vendors and artists I met. I started it with a goal that it would be a design project.
Right.
To be honest, but I have learned so much out of expectation from it. Like, even I understand my identity more, also like the history of Hong Kong's like neon industry, on how we compare to other cultures.
Yeah.
Or how even from the tiniest day, like from a neon band, like you can understand why a culture is behaving in a certain way, or why is a country have such reputation of sort as well. So like, this is something very unexpected.
You honestly, looking at a neon sign, you'd never have any idea that it contained that much kind of cultural reference within it. You began in Amsterdam, well, you began in Hong Kong, and then you kind of embarked on this journey in Amsterdam. Where else have you gone to around the world?
Yeah, so for this project, I have went to France and US and also Taiwan, and I'll be going to Japan next.
Yes.
To finish it up. I'm very excited as well because I'll be learning from a female neon vendor there, and also from her master as well.
So two generations of neon masters.
Yes, from a culture that is very defined in the hierarchy and a lot of social codes and stuff. So I'm very interested to learn.
How do the Japanese use neon? Is it in a similar way to Hong Kong, where it's a kind of got a commercial past? Does every culture have that with neon?
Okay, so from my personal speculation, a lot of countries are still using neon as a medium for commercial signs.
Mm-mm.
There are a few where you see more neon art.
Yeah.
Like more experimentations on glass and gas as a medium, and how the artists manipulate it. I see that more in US, Netherlands, and Taiwan.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there might be also a chance that because I haven't stayed in those countries also long enough to understand the community more. I would also say that a lot of neon vendors are getting into the art industry as well.
Mm-hmm.
also particularly the young ones.
Yeah.
Actually.
In Hong Kong, are there other young neon artists?
Yeah, there are some young neon vendors. Mm-hmm.
Because presumably when, you know, like in the 50s, 60s, at the height of the industry, were there quite a lot of vendors here?
Yeah, back then they have factories neon vendors. And yeah, of course we don't have those factories now. All the Sifus, they're working in their own studio now.
Mm-hmm.
Like either they own it or they rent it or they share with someone.
Yeah, yeah. And you've set up your own studio here. I can see. There's a table with countless of like burn marks on it.
Yes, like, yeah, from the Art Basel piece for Le Parade, like, I had to bend 300 neon tubes within 1 month. And yes.
That's a lot.
Yeah, that's how you see all the burn marks. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, trying to prove that I was really working. Actually, you would be surprised. A lot of people in the industry thought I wasn't bending my own neon.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, they assumed that somebody else did it for you.
Yeah, and then they would just be like, did you bend it? Like, a lot of people ask me that question. I'm like, yeah.
Why do you think that is?
Yeah. Maybe because they also know that I am not that experienced.
Yeah.
I'm quite new and green to the industry, so they probably assumed that I didn't do them.
I can vouch for it, she did.
Yeah, some of them, they know that I bend off them, and then they will be fair. Like, you can tell some of them are appreciating the fact that I can bend all of these things, and they also understand the difficulty in doing curves as well.
Right, yeah.
And so, like, I do appreciate.
Because the piece you're talking about was installed in Taekwon during Art Basel for Le Prairie, right?
Yeah.
And it was I didn't see it, but I've seen pictures and it was huge.
Yes, it was called Light as Air, and actually it was a series of three different installations commissioned by Le Prairie for three different venues.
Right.
But the biggest one was in Taekwon Parade Ground.
Mm-hmm.
That was 10 meters by 5 meters by 3 meters.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was massive. I believe it was the first outdoor neon art installation of this scale in Hong Kong as well.
Wow.
You can tell that also it has some certain of difficulties for the neon installers in town.
Right.
Because it was actually a sculptural piece that is 3D.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times when they were doing commercial signs, they're flat.
Yeah.
But then I'm trying to make it difficult for everyone as much as possible. So because the structure was quite sculptural, there are some steps that we have to follow when we are installing it, or even have to be even extra careful with it.
When it comes to installing neon, Neon Bender does the glass work, but then do they also install the gas, or is that somebody else?
So this is the interesting thing. Like, as far as what I speculate around the world now, in this generation, in this era, actually most of the neon benders or artists, they could design, like draw the pattern, and then they will bend the neon, they do the bombarding or not. And then they would do the installation themselves as well.
Right.
But in Hong Kong, it is still very, they just differentiate each skills like separately.
Okay.
So you have different departments.
Right.
So you would probably have someone only doing the design and patterns, and then a sifu doing the neon bending.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe another sifu would do bombarding.
What is bombarding?
Bombarding is the part where you actually mix the neon light up.
Okay.
It is a equipment that I don't have here.
Right, okay.
And basically you have to heat up the tube to get rid of all the impurities in it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you inject the gas in as well.
Okay. Have you done that?
I've never done that. That's actually the most dangerous part or process in neon making, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of technicians got killed by it because like the voltage was really high. It's like 10 kV. So it's really a lot. And so it could really kill people with that.
Right, okay.
But other than that, usually it's not that dangerous.
Yeah. Do you burn yourself often?
yes, I do burn myself mm-hmm. a lot.
Yeah.
Sometimes you're just not aware of a heated part, and then you just touched it.
Yeah.
So like I have a lot of my thumbs, maybe my middle finger mm-hmm. somehow got burnt a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess like maybe the nerves died as already, so yeah. I don't feel as much okay. now. Yeah.
I mean, maybe that's good.
Yeah, maybe that's good. But you don't need to feel that much with your fingers. Yeah.
When people think of, okay, when foreigners think of Hong Kong, they think of these like tightly packed streets with just neon signs kind of like on top of each other, like a jigsaw puzzle. But actually Hong Kong today is not really like that anymore
mm-hmm.
because the government has this law that means these old signs need to come down, and often they are not replaced with neon signs. Do you think that this is a shame?
I do think it is a shame for sure. I actually have something planning in my head to push some policies around. I have something in my mind, but I have to do things step by step.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I have something in my mind planning for that
mm-hmm.
part.
Okay. Have you been accepted by the local neon sifus here?
I don't think so. Yeah, I do talk to them because yeah. like for all the bombarding work, I actually Master Wong is helping me with all my bombarding mm-hmm. work. So okay. yeah, I do talk to them, and that is also how I draw my line that I'm only doing neon art. I won't be doing neon signs.
Yeah.
So like rest assured, like I'm not taking your jobs.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't worry too mm-hmm. much about it. I'm just doing something experimental. Mm. I just want to break boundaries of what neon's perspective is usually is, and I will keep doing that in my own way.
Yeah. Do you think they're interested in the work that you're doing?
I'm not sure. But to be honest, I feel like Master Wong is really proud of what I did at Thai Kun.
Yeah.
I can tell mm-hmm. that from him. For the others, I'm not sure
right.
because I don't talk to them yeah. as much.
Do they still keep busy?
I don't know. Mm. But every time when I visit Master Wong's studio, he does have like some new work or something that he's working at.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
That's good. Yeah, it would be a real shame to see all of Hong Kong's neon disappear. So hopefully it won't.
Yeah, there's a lot of things to push. But like this is also what I understand is a lot of like from working the Art Basel pieces is that actually a lot of the policy makers, they are not very aware of what neon is in the first place. A lot of people would just keep on saying it's dangerous, it's like da da da. But like if you ask them what are the dangerous parts, a lot of times they can't tell you. And then if they are saying, oh, it is you know, the voltage is very high, and then like but the current is low,
right?
And then oh, there's mercury in it, and then like sometimes it's like but the mercury level is very tiny, and it's smaller than your your fingernails or whatever. The amount we use is so tiny. And then, or sometimes they were just like, oh, it will explode. And then like, no, it won't explode like that.
Mm.
And you understand there are so many misinformation about this medium.
Right.
And there are so many myths about it that made people fear of. But the thing is, they don't understand it at all and just like try to avoid it. But like, I'm very glad that for Art Basel, I actually pushed a little bit of their boundaries.
Yeah.
And actually try to be able to do what I want safely as well
mm-hmm.
in a safe way, and also interpreting neon in a nice way as well. Even for my own Neon Girl exhibition, I am actually creating six different works from what I learned from six different neon vendors.
Okay.
And I have to find a venue for that mm-hmm, exhibition mm-hmm. and I'm still in such a pain. I couldn't find the ideal spot.
Right. You'll find it. I have faith.
Yeah, I hope so. Mm-hmm. I'm still like scouting.
That's it for this week's episode with neon artist Chan Kar-Lun. You can find out more about her and her work by searching for her on social media. You've been listening to Yamcha, a news podcast from Hong Kong Free Press, written, produced, and edited by me, Mercedes Hutton. HKFP is a member of the Trust Project, Find out all about our journalistic standards by visiting hongkongfp.com/ethics. And for more informative and impartial coverage, and to learn how to support our journalist-led newsroom, visit hongkongfp.com.